Well, once again, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink. You know, you have to add that. Because, well, you heard about the guy in Texas. He said at a meeting, he said, I haven't found it necessary to have a drink in 25 years. And his buddy said, he said, Fred, I saw you last night. You were drunk as a skunk. You were drinking all over the place. He says, yeah, but it wasn't necessary. But I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 17th, 1981. And not a record around here. As I said, my sponsor has 57 years. I see some old friends here that I haven't seen. I see a lot of people I haven't seen in a while. And I don't want to leave anybody else out. I did see Bernie here somewhere. You know, are you still sober?
I think so.
Oh, wow. It's a miracle. I've known Bernie for like 30 years, you know, and I know where the skeletons are buried. I have the stories, you know. I knew these guys when they were still crazy, which was a week ago for you, I figured, you know. But I see some really great guys here. It really is a privilege to be asked to share at meetings and to be invited here. I want to thank Bernie and the group. It's just a privilege to be able to do this kind of stuff in AA. This is service for me. I'm a big believer in service, and I'm a grateful guy. And somewhere along the line, we'll probably get into that gratitude. And so I gratefully do this stuff here and in a lot of places. I'm very much involved in my church, and we started a ministry there, which is like AA. It's called Alive Again, and that's a whole other deal. And I'll talk about that later when we get into the other stuff that's involved after you've been sober for a while, that they talk about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that they never talk about in any AA meetings. You know, things like encouraged church membership and losing all prejudice even against organized religion, beginning to see where religious people are riding, all that stuff that people in Alcoholics Anonymous jump up down and say we're not supposed to talk about. So I'm here to comfort the afflicted and to pretty much afflict the comfortable. So, you're going to hear some stuff. You know, my whole goal is to allow you to hear some stuff that you ain't never heard at any AA meeting before, and you'll turn to your neighbor and you'll say something like, is that legal? Is he allowed to do that? Well, let me explain something to you. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they can't, did you know that? They can't fire you. They can't, you know, it takes, because we're so codependent and worried about what other people think about us. You know, we sit around sucking our thumbs and worry about stuff, but the truth of the matter is, if you have the courage to say what's really on your mind, what's really working for you, and sharing that stuff with you, you can say just about anything. And the only thing that'll happen is they'll stop inviting you, and so I say all sorts of nasty, crazy, wacko things. I'll probably mention Jesus once or twice, or Christ, or talk about the scripture. I'll say all sorts of things you're not allowed to talk about in AA, notwithstanding the fact they talked about in AA for the first 4 years, because all they did was read the Bible. I'll say a lot of stuff that'll probably get you upset. Well, you need to get upset. You know, as a matter of fact, if you get upset, I should get like a copayment, you know, because it says the way the spiritual axiom works is whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. And so what we do in here is instead of getting upset with the person, we get upset with the person. But if you're sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you get upset with the person, you get mad, you write it down, you talk to your sponsor, you pray over it, and somewhere down the road, a week or 10 days or a year down the road, you discover why you're upset, and then all of a sudden, somehow, some way, you change, you accept that deal, it melds into the way you think, your perception about life and everything changes, you see things differently, and all of a sudden, that same guy, that same thing, it just doesn't upset you anymore, along with a whole other lot of things that were upsetting you that seemed to go away because that guy who upset you was not the only thing that upset you, he was just a person that's a symptom of a million other things that were upsetting you, and your whole life changes. And then what you got to do is you got to track down that guy and say, I used to hate you, but now I love you. Here's $10. That's your copayment. Because it's like a spiritual MRI, you know what I mean? So what you want to do is you want to make sure that you put yourself in front of people that tell you things that just piss you off. Because, you know, if people are telling you things that make you feel good, it means they're telling you things you want to hear. And if they're telling you things you want to hear, that means they're telling you things that have to do with your old ideas that meld into your old ideas that you agree with. And God forbid, we know that you're all insane, so if you agree with them, there's got to be something sick about it. Because the truth of the matter is your best thinking got you in here and continues to keep you sick. And so what you want to do is find somebody who's going to talk about solutions and not about the problem, or talk about things that you already know already. Preferably something that you've never heard, that at least if you walk out of the room, you're thinking about it. And maybe you'll learn something. We want to learn something. I have a heart for newcomers, but I got to tell you something. Where my heart really is, and we'll talk about this later on, is for guys that know just a little bit too much. And I'm not talking about newcomers. I'm talking about guys between the ages of 10 years sober and 25 or 30 years sober, whom I sponsor quite a bit of, who are crazy at bed bugs, and they just haven't experienced much of heaven and been rocketed in the fourth dimension. They're sober. They're picking up those chips at meetings, you know, but they haven't reached what Bill Wilson was talking about when they talk about emotional sobriety. When he talks about the real problem in here and the problem having to do with unhealthy dependencies. And you would never know it, and nobody's ever going to know it because nobody's ever going to rebuke them or talk to them or say anything to them because, after all, they got 15, 20 years. And they know how to say AA, and they know how to talk AA, and they know, you know, so who's going to talk to them? And they'll just go along being satisfied with just being mediocre in Alcoholics Anonymous. Instead of trying to go for the joy of living, which is what this program is all about. So those are the people I really have a heart for, and I'm going to talk a lot about emotional sobriety, very little about physical sobriety. I don't know how to get somebody physically sober. I think you have to drink. I mean, if you ask me, everybody has their opinion, but I think drinking, I think it's a real important thing to drink in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to say that. I mean, I hate to see anybody die or anything like that, but you know, it's going to happen, you know, no matter what I say. But I think it's a sad, sad thing when people come in here prematurely. You know what I mean? I think everybody has to, I don't want to stop an alcoholic from having his last drink. You know, I don't want to rob anybody of their desperation. I think desperation is very important, especially for the first step. Because it has to do with giving up and surrendering. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'll talk a little bit about control and fear. You know, so in any event, so we'll talk about a bunch of things. And in the 3 hours I have here tonight or whatever. Is that a nervous laugh? So it's good to be here. I got to tell you something. It's really good to be in Miami. This is probably one of the oldest groups. Is this the oldest group or one of the oldest groups?
The oldest group at the same spot.
The oldest group at the same spot. You know, all the groups I ever went to in Alcoholics Anonymous in the last 30 years, they're all gone or they moved or something like that. And this is the oldest group. The other group I would have said would be the North Miami group. Now I'm doing the steps there next. But they moved. This is the oldest group at the same spot. 30 years ago when I was going to AA, this group was...
29 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it's good to be in Miami because I was up in Boca Raton and then I was up in Palm Beach and... in other states, in other continents, you know, but they don't allow me to talk in Dade County for some reason. They like me 100 miles away from here. So it's always good to come back and see old faces and people that I haven't seen before. So I'm going to talk about a lot about things. I'm going to jump around. This is going to be like, what's that movie that jumps all over Pulp Fiction? Everybody ever see Pulp Fiction? You know, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going to drag a little from pop culture, so if you don't understand, you're going to have to go home and rent it. You know, I mean, there's this movie, Pulp Fiction, it like starts in the end, and it goes to the middle, and then it goes to the beginning, and somehow, the whole point about it is, I don't want to say what the whole point is, but you certainly got to keep awake during these things, because, you know, it makes a lot of hard right turns, and if you're not awake, and if you're not working on this thing, you'll like miss what's going on. You'll miss connecting the dots, and so... unfortunately or fortunately or for whatever it is, I find myself talking about one thing and taking a hard ride and going to another thing, and hopefully I'll find my way back again and we'll, you know, I when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor said, he says, you know, your problem is you have unreasonable expectations. Get rid of your expectations. So there's probably people here that are going to think I'm saying, well, now I'm going to hear about the first step. Well, maybe. Who knows? But in any event, at these prices, you know, you can't be sure. But, the bottom line is I'm going to talk about every single step. Because in my life, I don't even do the steps anymore. I'm just living. And if you're doing these things right and you're living, you're living the steps. You're not doing the exercises. You're not doing the push-ups. You know, it's not something you do that's different. It's not like, well, I'm doing a 10th step, or I'm doing a 3rd step, or I'm doing a 7th step, or I'm doing an 11th step. It's just you're just waking up and breathing in the morning, and you're going to sleep at night. And you're talking to people, and you're communicating, and you're fellowshipping, and you're living your life, and, you know, it doesn't even seem like you're doing the steps, you're just living life. And you're free, because you have that new freedom. You have that new happiness. It's not like any happiness or freedom you ever had before, because it's new! You don't regret the past, you don't sit around thinking about other people and what they think about you, you don't walk across the street to avoid his gaze, or... worry about what they're talking about you, or what they're thinking about you, or any of that stuff, because you've lost your fear of people. You've lost your fear of people. You're not adding up your budget every 5 seconds, or wondering where you're going to live, or what happened last week, or how's it going to affect you next week, or what are you going to do tomorrow, or about your boss, or about the night, or any of that other stuff, because you're minding your own business. Because you're not thinking all that much, because it doesn't really require a lot of thinking in order to live. You know, it requires a lot of thinking in order to worry. Because when you have to control, you see, sometimes what we have to do is, you see, if you live the life of an alcoholic, I think if you live the life of a human being, but especially an alcoholic, I'm not sure a lot of the stuff we have going for us is that much different than regular human beings, although I know and I believe we are different in many ways. But if you live the life of an alcoholic, you have to be in control. Because if you're not in control, I mean, what I want to do, I just want to control everything. I want to control you, I want to control the traffic, I want to control my boss, I want to control the money flow, I want to control the United States, I want to control the world, I want to control the universe, because if I can control everything, then I won't get hurt. And God knows I'm scared of being hurt. And if I'm not in control, I know somehow, some way, I'm going to get hurt. You know, and the problem is I have this crazy alcoholic idea that I can control things. By yelling and screaming or crying or whining or sucking my thumb or whatever it is I got to do. And of course you got to be awake all the time. You got to be constantly thinking and on guard and trying to figure things out and manipulating, you know, in order to be in control. You know, and you know, if you're in control, you know, if you're in control, you part of the reasons you're in control is you somehow think that you have the power to control things. I don't know, I guess because one day you walk in and you yell at somebody, you scream at somebody, you kick them in the ass, or you rip their heart out, or you do something, and they pick up the laundry, or whatever the hell they do. And so it gives you the idea that you're in control until one day you realize that you don't have a decent relationship with any human being. You've been divorced 15 times, you can't understand why, and it's because you've never learned how to have any kind of decent relationship with any human being on the planet Earth. You just learned how to kick them around. And so you walk into some sort of strange fellowship where they're saying stuff and you're listening to them and you think you understand, but you don't understand the word they're saying. Because you go to some strange fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous and it says the three things that you have to accept absolutely unconditionally, being convinced. And the first thing you got to accept is that we're alcoholics and we cannot control our own lives. That's what it says. It says we cannot manage our own lives. Did you know that? Did you know it said, doesn't it read that? Did we read that? Somebody read that at this meeting? The three pertinent ideas, that way we're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives. Did somebody read that? And I think the B thing is no human power could have relieved their alcoholism. And I think the C thing is that God could and would if he was sought. And then I think right after that, the next line is being convinced of this, we're now ready to step three. Being convinced of this. And so we read that, you know, like we read everything in AA. You know how people read things in AA? They read them and forget them. They read them and ignore them. You know how many lines there are in AA that are important lines that people don't even see? You know, it's a big book. It's not. How many people there are in Alcoholics Anonymous that are not experienced their joy of living because they've read this big book and they think this entire program is about acceptance is the answer to all my problems? No, it's not. Because then it'd be a very thin book and it'd be one page. Acceptance is not the answer. Sometimes courage is the answer. Many times, as a matter of fact, most of the times, faith is the answer. You know, but it sounds great. And you want to know something? For the first year or two, you may be living off of acceptance. You may be living off the first step of the serenity prayer. You may find your entire focus is on accepting things you cannot change because you're so damn scared of changing the things you can and you don't even know what you can change anything. Anyway, you want things to change around you. But somewhere along the line, as you grow up and become like an adult in Alcoholics Anonymous, you may learn that there are things that you actually have to do. And rather than accept, you have to learn how to man up and, you know, get some courage and trust in God and change some things. Like maybe you need to get another job. Maybe you need to go out there and interview instead of whining about the job you have. I mean, there's a lot of things that you learn in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's a real growing up experience. And so one day when I was, before I came to AA, when I was 26, 25 years. Now I'm 62 years old. I've been married for 30 years. I got four children and six grandchildren, and my memory is not that good. I mean, I remember, there's certain things I remember like it was yesterday, but dates, forget it. So my dates might not even jive. I don't know, but somewhere when I was in my 20s, before I got sober when I was 31 years old, I was married to this lovely girl, this non-alcoholic girl. You know, you can always tell non-alcoholics, like they take a sip of wine and then they leave the rest. And I'm the guy who, you know, drinks the rest of it because there's little kids starving in China. Something like that. I don't know. Whatever the deal is. But in any event, one day, you know, I was about 100 pounds lighter. I'm in my blue suit, my white shirt, my red tie. I've got my house on Miami Beach, on the golf course, the LaGoris Golf Course. I got my little child. I'm a division chief in the state attorney's office trying major murder cases, homicide cases, and I'm driving across the causeway to go to the Metro Justice Building, and I come out, and it's a Friday morning, and it's at, 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm feeling great, and I'm looking great, and I'm sure as hell a lot smarter and sharper than I am right now. Let me tell you something. I had to get real dumb in order to get Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was the smartest guy in the world, I was the drunkest guy in the bar, I can tell you that. In any event, I mean, that's the truth. And in any event, when I came to AA, I was a sight. I had two neurons working. They were waving goodbye at each other. But in any event, so I walk outside, and my wife says to me, she looks at me, she says, "I just want you to know if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you." You know, I mean, that's the way she says it. She didn't want to, it wasn't like she was starting a fight. I'm as sober physically as I am right now. You know, it was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and she looked at me and she says, "I just want you to know." It was like she was serving me with papers or making an announcement or something. She didn't want to talk about it. She said, "I just want you to know, if you come home drunk one more..." Now, she could have said, you know, "If you don't start treating me better, if you don't start acting, if you don't start spending more time with me, you know, whatever." But that's not what she said. She said, "If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you." And now, I've analyzed that statement. You know, I graduated with Departmental Honors in Mathematics. I was a National Science Foundation Fellow. I was going for my PhD in algebraic topology, whatever that is, you know what I mean? And I forgot everything I knew then. I ended up going to law school, and I was a smart kid. You know, I thought of myself as smart. I worshiped my brain. And I've been thinking about that deal, you know? If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I'm thinking about whether you could actually take a word out of that. You know what I mean? Like, which word would you take out? If, leave, drunk. I mean, it's like a perfect sentence. I mean, there's no ounce of fat on that sentence. It's as clear. It's like the kind of sentence, it's like when a judge says to you, "If I see you again, you're going to jail." It's like one of those sentences where it's impossible to say, "I didn't understand what you were saying." You know what I mean? I didn't get it. You know, it's a perfect sentence. And I'm as sober as you can possibly be, early in the morning, no hangover, and the most important person in my life, or who should be the most important person in my life, having to do with my entire life, lays that sentence on me, and I get in my car, and I drive three blocks, and I stop at a red light, and I go like this. What the hell did she mean by that? So, this brings me to my alcoholic axiom number one. Now, I've learned these things over a period. I'm just sharing you my experience. You know, experience is more important than theories. We've got a lot of people with opinions and theories. You know, I'm talking about experience, you know. And, you know, my first sponsor said, when the man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. So the bottom line is, based upon my alcoholic experience with myself and other people, this is my first axiom. Whenever an alcoholic sees, hears, or is told anything he doesn't like, it confuses him. So we're sort of like idiot savants, you know, we're idiot savants. We can be the greatest singers like Britney Spears. We can be the greatest football players. We can be the greatest anything. We can be making money. We can be billionaires. We can be anything. But there's a part in our life that's like a blind side where somebody says, "If you do this, you'll die." And we say, "What the hell are they talking about?" You know what I mean? Now, here's, I'm going to tell you something. When you have a disease, which is mental and emotional and spiritual, where the statement, "If you come home drunk more time, I'm leaving you," confuses you. Trust me, somewhere along the way in your life, you're going to have some really bad consequences. It's going to have to do with marriage and relationships and all sorts of stuff. And you're going to be like befuddled. What's happening? What's wrong with me? You're not going to understand it because you're missing something. And that's the way it is in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the way it is with this big book. This big book says a ton of things that people never read. You know, I'll read stuff from the big book, and I'm going to do this as this thing goes on, that you'll have never heard before. And it's not because you didn't read it. It's because you read it, and you know what you did with it? You did what I did with my wife. What the hell did she mean by that? There's some serious, serious stuff that they state in this book that most people in Alcoholics Anonymous have never heard. They like all the psychological stuff because, God, we're so brilliant. We like to analyze ourselves, but they don't like that spiritual stuff. And so what happens is they read this book and they come to a spot where the book says something. And it's maybe the most important thing. It could sound like this. Here is the how and why of it. Here is the how and why of it. We had to quit playing God. Well, we read it and then we just move on because what the hell does that mean? It doesn't matter. Let's get to the stuff that I really want to talk about. But here's the how and why of it. You know, or the great fact is this and nothing less. Or see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Or maybe this sentence, right after you take the third step in Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe this sentence right here, where it says in chapter 3, you know, in AA rooms all over the United States, they read from time to time, you maybe read from time to time, something called the third step prayer. We are now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me. You heard that prayer before? And you know, very few people, if anybody, in Alcoholics Anonymous, knows what the line is after the third step prayer. Not only the most important line in the book, but a line that's repeated over and over and over and over and over again in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, 1,000 different ways, and people miss it. And you know why they miss it? They miss it for the same reason I missed what my wife said when she said, you come home drunk more time, I'm leaving you. I missed that because I didn't understand it, and I didn't like it, and I didn't understand it, and I didn't like it because I sensed it had something to do with my not drinking, and I didn't want to stop drinking. So when somebody tells me something that upsets me and pisses me off and tells me to do something that I don't want to do, or advises me that I got to go in a direction that I don't want to go, because willingness, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length, it's not if you want what we have, but do whatever the hell. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Not rarely have we seen a person fail that do whatever the hell they want to do and they're going to get it anyway. And then you start saying, what was their path? The guys who wrote the book. The book Alcoholics Anonymous was written in 1939. A started in 1935. The book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written in 1939. AA started in 1935. I want you to think about that for a second. The part where it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That was written in 1939. When you read that, you're reading something that was written in 1939. Their path started in 1935. Part of their path had nothing to do with reading the big book. If you don't understand that, we're going to have a discussion after the meeting. They were not reading the big book. They were not reading the 12 and 12. You'd have to figure out what they were reading. Now, I'll tell you what they're reading. You can read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and you can find out what they're reading. You can find out even what the essential, what they felt was the essential reading material of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can find out about the morning meditation. You can find out about 1 Corinthians 13. You can find out the book of James that they read, that was fundamentally important to them, the book of James. You can find out about Sermon on the Mount, which you can find out about the Bible that they're reading all the way up until 1952, and in some groups it's still around. You could find out exactly what they were doing. Or you could say, I wonder what the hell they meant by that. Because you'd rather not hear it. But it's the truth, and it happens to be. And this is not, forget about AA approved. There's no AA disapproved. You understand what I'm saying? AA approved just means that AA publishes it. You want AA approved, read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, read what was actually going on, and find out what the facts are. This has nothing to do with religion or what you should be or what you should do. This has to do with the facts. Rarely have we seen a person fail who was, because when you find out what they were reading, when you find out what they're reading and you intelligently search for that and you understand what this thing was all about, then you'll maybe look at this book a little bit differently and maybe you'll learn something about yourself and other people. You'll learn something about what the program really is about, and then maybe you will experience the rocket ship ride they experienced when they said, we've experienced much of heaven, we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, instead of when I asked you how you're doing saying, hanging in there after 14 years of sobriety, hanging in there. Maybe you'll experience what this thing is really about and what it's supposed to be about, instead of being just another thumb-sucking crybaby. Because it's easy to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. You could be the most miserable son of a bitch, sit in the back room and say, I want to talk about God, whatever it is, and you could do that deal. You understand what I'm saying? In every AA meeting, there's a big door, and above the door it says, not drinking club. And we got 1,000 million guys behind the not drinking club, and there's another door over there that says, rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. There's like 3 guys and a gal behind that door. And every once in a while, you see a guy come from this side of the room, walk over to that side of the room, because he's just not satisfied. He wants more, because he's thirsty for more. And you very rarely see a guy from that side of the room walk over to the other door. And it's your life. It ain't a dress rehearsal, so you got to decide what you want. And so we read this third step prayer. You know, when you start reading what they were reading, and you understand what they were doing, you understand where all this stuff came from. And this stuff stops coming from, it goes from watching TV in black and white, it goes to Technicolor. And then things start happening in your life, it starts moving and shaking. Because now you're finally ready to be willing and surrender completely and utterly to Him. That sounds a little biblical, sounds a little churchy, doesn't it? Surrendering utterly to Him. Giving your life up for Him. You know, but then again, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what group you belong to. I belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an AA. I have no idea what group you belong to. Just because you're in an AA meeting to me doesn't mean you're in the fellowship of the Spirit. All you have to have is a desire to stop drinking to belong to AA. But I'll tell you something, you need a lot more than that to be involved in the fellowship of the Spirit. You will surely meet some of us. You trudge the road to happy destiny. It talks about the fellowship of the Spirit, which, by the way, comes from the book Galatians. The fellowship of the Spirit. And if you want to find out what the fellowship of the Spirit is about, I guess you'd have to do a little bit more reading. You'd have to find out where these guys got this thing. But you're not going to do that if it bitches you out or pisses you off or goes contrary to some sort of old idea you have that you don't want to get rid of because you're worried about what Aunt Molly might think about you or whether they'll laugh at you in Alcoholics Anonymous because notwithstanding the fact you're 30, 40, 50 years old, you sit around biting your nails worrying about what some son of a bitch in Alcoholics Anonymous who isn't even paying your Visa card is thinking about you. Where your whole life is worrying about what other people think about you. What kind of life is that? What kind of, God help me from living a life where I sit around talking, being, or trying to look like what other people want me to look like so I'll be accepted because God forbid I'll be rejected. And every person who's in Alcoholics Anonymous is also in Don't Reject Me Anonymous. Please love me Anonymous. Why don't you like me Anonymous? Please accept me, Anonymous. That's why you drank. That's why I drank. I used to think I loved people. I didn't think I was scared of people. Well, if I loved people and I wasn't scared of people, why did I always have to drink when I was in bars? Why did I always have to get drunk in order to have fun or have sex or anything like that? If I loved them and I wasn't scared, why did I have to get lubricated or have courage in order to be able to join the group? I'd walk in saying, gee, I hope they like me. I hope the group accepts me. And I'd have a couple of pops and all of a sudden I thought I owned the group. It was all about fear. It was all about fear of rejection and childishness. We're now at step three. So what is the sentence after the third step prayer? We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves to Him. That we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. What does the word abandon mean? I don't think it's the same thing as, you know, once in a while. Think about Him once in a while. What does the word utterly mean? Sort of puts an emphasis on it. You know, but you see, what people do is they read this book and stuff like that, which is the most important stuff, by the way. And it's all over this book, statements like that. There is one who, you know, every AME you read, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find Him now. And you have these guys running around today. He says, this guy talks too much about God. You better stop listening to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where the sickness is, by the way. You know what the fellowship is? It's a bunch of sick alcoholics that want to cater to the lowest common denominator that sit around that really don't want to do this thing, but it makes them feel good to go to meetings. It's the place we go to drink coffee instead of beer and talk about the same bullshit we talked about in the bars for some people. This is where the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's not in the fellowship. If you're lucky on a good day, you may hear somebody talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, what's really in here. If you start listening too much of what people think AA is about, you're going to start listening to people say, yeah, but I don't want to do that. I don't know. What do they mean by that? I don't think they mean you're going to talk. You're going to start hearing people like the telephone. Remember the game telephone? It starts over here. You know, everybody knows the game telephone. Somebody says one thing over here. And by the time it gets to the 15th person, it's all watered down. It's all a different thing. A is just, you know, thank God we have this book. Do you have any idea what A would look like if we didn't have this book? If we didn't have this book, if we didn't have this stuff written down, you know what AA would look like? Have you ever actually listened to what is said in AA meetings? Have you listened to the chatter and the talking and the complaining and the whining? Do you have any idea what we would be like if we didn't have this stuff written down? If it wasn't black and white? If we didn't have guys that had 20? You know what this thing would be like if everybody who had over 10 years left? Or 20 years left? Just left it for people, and then you think this thing would be watered down? And so people read this book, like I read this book, and I thought I read it, I thought I knew it, but you know, all that stuff about God and utterly and all that stuff, I just sort of skipped right over. Because I didn't want to do that deal. I didn't want to go in that area. I didn't want to go. So, you know, I said, well, I'm going to do this thing. I'm reading this thing. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. I'll just accept a lie. Which will get you somewhere, but it ain't going to get you to Hawaii. We'll talk about that another. I'm not going to talk about the Hawaii thing now. It ain't going to get you to the promised land. Acceptance is going to get you somewhere early on. And so that night when she said, "You come on, drunk one time, I'm leaving you," I went to the bar. No, you don't understand. It's not that I forgot. I heard what she said. I was going to come home. You understand what I'm saying? But I went to the bar to have a drink, you know, to have one drink. And I got there at 4 o'clock because I always got to the bar an hour early, you know what I mean, to beat the crowd. And I was sitting next to my friend Doug. And I even said to him, the first thing I said before I had my first drink, I said, "Doug, I can't stay long." Because Ronnie says, if I come home drunk more times, she's leaving you. And he said, you know, great drinking buddy that he is, she's not going to leave you. She loves you. You're a great guy. And no. She was serious. She was serious. So apparently, even though I say I didn't understand, I did understand. I understood. I didn't believe it. It couldn't be, you know, but I was talking to him about it. And so I ordered my drink. It was a double scotch. I didn't realize until about 5 years later that I was already on my second drink when I had my first drink. It's like two scotches. It was a drink. It was a glass, you know. And I went like this. I went whack. Because that's the way I drank. As a matter of fact, when I came to AA, people didn't think I was an alcoholic. They said, "We just thought you drank fast." Because I drank for the effect. You know, the problem is, I wish I could tell you that alcohol, I didn't realize this, but alcohol is not it really isn't the problem. It's just the symptom of the disease. Drinking alcohol is but a symptom of the disease. You know, we have the only disease that's named after the cure. I mean, it's the best cure we have other than Alcoholics Anonymous and God. You know, it's the best cure we have because I drank. The big book tells me men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That's why you drink, because you like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. You want to add in worried, depressed, whatever you want to add in. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. Sober. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others take with impunity. So I drank because no gal, no skirt, no suit of clothes, no amount of money, no anything worked quite as well for me as just a few drinks. I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have it work for them like it worked for me and stop. You just ain't going to do it. It just did something for me that nothing else did. And that's why I drank. I didn't drink because alcohol was the problem. I drank because alcohol was the perfect solution. I started feeling relief as I was pulling into the parking lot of the bar. As I'm pulling into the parking lot, I'm home. Relief is a second away. But my problem was not the drinking. My problem was sobriety. I couldn't stand sobriety. Rich or poor, money or no money, girl or no girl, it didn't matter over any period of time. I'd be happy. You know, I know if I had this gal, if I had this amount of money, if I had this car, if I had this job, If I had this suit, if I could lose 10 pounds, anything vanity, I'll be okay. And I would be okay for like 10 minutes, and then the craziness would happen, and I'd be restless, or I'd be bored, or I'd be something, and I'd say something like, I need a drink. Because this is bullshit, and somehow, some way, because of the way I think and the way I am, it all boils down to, who the hell do you think you are? You don't know who you're talking to. You know? Why is this always happening to me? I can't believe this bullshit, you know? Why am I always the victim? And all of a sudden, it always boils down to that feeling sorry for myself, being a self-pityaholic, no matter what's going down. And it all goes down to two, but I hurt other people, but I think I'm the victim. And I do that sober. I'd love to be able to say alcohol caused me to hurt people. I'd like to say it's alcohol's fault, but you want to, some alcohol never caused me to do anything. Most of the people I hurt in my life really bad, I hurt them cold stone sober. And I've hurt many people the same way, doing the same bullshit, with the same anger and bullshit and manipulative activities that I did after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous than before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only thing alcohol ever did for me is to allow me to live with my sorry self and make me feel okay about myself rather than blow my brains out. Because the more I drank it, it would make it feel, and then finally it turns on, you can't drink it anymore. But then all of a sudden I got the stuff, the only stuff that ever worked for me in my life, so I didn't feel like a miserable son of a bitch. All of a sudden I can't drink it anymore. So for a few seconds I feel good. I feel great. All of a sudden I got money. I'm patting myself on the back because I'm not drinking. And then all of a sudden there's only one problem. I still got alcoholism. I didn't even experience alcoholism until I was 18 months or 3 years sober. I really didn't, because I never had a chance. All I experienced before I got sober was drunk. That's what alcoholics experience, drunk. They don't experience alcoholism, because whenever alcoholism raises its ugly head, 5 miles out on the horizon, and I see it coming, I never really get to experience it, because I say, give me a drink. And I medicate, and I pop a pill. I'll tell you when you start experiencing alcoholism, when you haven't had a drink in 18 months, and all of a sudden you're thinking 15,000 miles per hour with 10,000 voices, and it's all about you, and it's bad shit. You know what I mean? And you know it can't be alcohol, and it ain't alcohol. It's something called alcoholism. And how are you going to cure that? And the fact of the matter is, the cure we have has to do with a spiritual disease, because we're spiritually diseased. And it has to, and that's why it says, and the problem is we're powerless. It says that if a mere philosophy of life would help us, better morals, we would have been sober a long time ago. That's what it says in chapter of the agnostic. See, they don't have a chapter of the believers. You know why? Because all the chapters are to the believers. There's only one chapter to the agnostics. And you know what the chapter says? Get over it. This sort of thinking has to be abandoned. God either is or he isn't. What was our decision to be? And that's why God's placed it throughout the steps. And that's why we have it all throughout the steps, all throughout the book. It's the only answer. May you find him now, sitting within a fellowship where half the time most of the people are saying, I don't want to hear about this God shit. And newcomers think that God is bad, and church is bad, and religion is bad, and all that stuff is bad, because they don't read the book Alcoholics Anonymous because they're lazy. Or if they read it, they skip over the parts that are really the parts that mean something, and they listen to the guy in the meeting that speaks the loudest or whatever it is, and they think that somehow God either has nothing to do with AA, or religion is bad, or all that stuff is going on, until a few of them hit 10, 20, or 30 years and actually start getting serious about this stuff and realize that Bill Wilson's sponsors, his real sponsors, were Sam Shoemaker and Ed Dowling, and these were all priests and everything like that, and they were studying the Bible, and for the first 4 years, from 1935 to 1939, all they did was study the Bible and Sermon on the Mount and all that sort of stuff. And all of a sudden, they start breaking through to what the real deal is in this thing. And so we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and we read that if you're an alcoholic, you cannot manage your own life. You cannot control or manage your own life. And then we say, well, that sounds good. We think we're doing AA. And then we go out in the car, we feel good for 5 seconds, and then we drive away and we start trying to figure out how we're going to control our lives. And then you spend the next, 10 or 12 hours trying to figure out how to manipulate, control, manage your life, manage people. You feel squirrely and crazy again and sort of nutty again, so you run to your next meeting. And once again, you're reminded you can't manage your own life, only God could, and all of a sudden you feel good for about 5 minutes. And then you get in the car and you drive away. And you start thinking, what are you going to do here, and what are you going to do there, and how are you going to make money, and what's going to happen here, and talking to people, and talking to other people who are managing their lives, and they're telling you how to manage theirs, you're telling them how to manage yours, and you're doing this, and all sort of stuff, until you start feeling crappy again. And you're feeling crappy again, so you say, it must be, I need to go to another meeting, so you go to another meeting, And they reach you again, something, they say, you're an alcoholic and you cannot manage your own life. No human power. God couldn't would if you should saw it. And you hear a little bit more about God and you pray a little and everything. And all of a sudden you start feeling better again. And you get in your car and you drive away. And then 5 minutes later, you start thinking about how you're going to manage your life. And what are you going to do? And where are you going to go? And what's going to happen? Because God has absolutely nothing to do with your life. Because you're totally self-reliant and you're missing the whole point. And you're missing the whole point. And that's why they have the seventh step. And they say you can even have an belief in God. But if you're self-reliant, it's never going to work. Because that's the whole problem. We're powerless. We're powerless. A miracle. So we go around and say, well, I'll just do the next right thing. Well, you're here because you can't. And it sounds good. I mean, what am I going to say? You don't do the next right thing? But the point is, we can't be Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. We can't. If there's anything that's been proven with Alcoholics Anonymous, is alcoholics cannot ever do the next right thing unless they're spiritually based, consistently over a period of time. And that's why they said, if a mere moral philosophy would work, we do it, but we want to feel do the next right thing works. You know why we want to feel it? Because if it's do the next right thing, then it has to do with our will. We're in charge and we're in control. Just control ourselves and do the next right thing. I won't get upset. I won't let it bother me. I'll stop thinking about the money. I'm not going to be mad. I'm not going to get upset. I'm not going to get angry. I'm going to try to go to sleep. You know? I'm not going to be pissed off until you pick up the phone and start screaming at somebody. For no reason whatsoever, except you're mad at somebody down the road. Because you're not having a life that's spiritually based. You're not really even doing this thing. You only think you are. You're plain AA. You're not really doing AA. Because AA has to do, see with it, that your relationship with God, you have a relationship with Him, is right, and then great events. And a relationship with God is the same as a relationship with another person. If I have a relationship with John Glenn, my sponsor, it's because I talk to him all the time. I think about him all the time. I converse with him on the phone all the time. I ask him about what he's thinking. I think about what he's thinking about. I think about where he's going. I miss him when I'm not around. I have relationships with people in my life. Well, if you're not thinking about God after you get out of this room, if you're not thinking about him when you're in the car, if you're not thinking about him every day of the week, if you're not thinking about him when you're wherever you are, you don't have a relationship with him. It's just something you. It's all he is to you is. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And then you walk out and say, I wonder what he meant by that. It's just something you hear at an AA meeting, but it really hasn't seeped into your life. And that's what it says in the big book. He says, we were powerless. We had to find a power by which we could live, by which we could live our life in every respect. And that means we wrote a book that we're going to talk about God. Now, I was saying the fact that everybody in AA says, this guy talks too much about God. And so some young guy walks out of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous about 15 years ago, and I walk out and he says, you Russell? And I said, yeah. He says, you know, my sponsor said I ought to listen to you, that you have some good things to say, but he says you talk too much about God. You know, I'm sort of thinking, I wasn't offended. As a matter of fact, I was pleased. Can you imagine? On my tombstone, he talked too much about God. Oh, man, what an indictment, you know? But here's the point. Here's a new guy, and Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't know anything about it. Some guy who apparently has some time in here says that to him. Gives him the idea that God is bad, even though he's in a group where it says, in other words, there's something bad about that deal. Because that's so much where we don't want to go. This book is telling us, alcoholics, all about stuff none of us really want to do. Because if we wanted to do it, we would be doing it, and we wouldn't be here. This whole thing is about what? Getting rid of our old ideas. If we don't, the result was, well, what? Nil. Zero. Nada. Nothing. Until we let go, what? Absolutely. Well, they can't possibly. Well, I wonder what they meant by that. I wonder what they meant by that. Let go, absolutely. Get rid of all old ideas. You know, if you don't want to go there, if you're pissed off at that, if that bothers you, I guess that's just an old idea you just don't want to get rid of. So why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous and poison everybody else in the room? See how many newcomers you can hurt by giving them your philosophy on what it is to stay sober when you got 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, whatever it is, you're looking at porno and you're blowing your brains out and want to kill yourself. Why don't you inflict your sobriety on other people when you're not really even taking it seriously yourself? Just playing AA. And so I had to find out what powerlessness was. And you know, the unfortunate thing, or maybe the fortunate thing, and this is the way it's been through thousands of years, they talk about it in the book, they talk about it in the seventh step, they talk about it in the first step. It says, unless and until an alcoholic in the 12 and 12 except his devastating weakness and all its consequences, sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. Well, that's a kick in the ass. I would like to come here 14 years and never try to find true happiness. Never feel good about yourself. It's God that will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. If you can do it for yourself, it ain't worthwhile. I want the stuff that I can't do for myself, what God is going to do for me. That's what I want. I met guys in here that were living this thing and doing stuff that I couldn't believe. I wanted what they had, and I didn't know how to get it. Well, of course I didn't know how to get it, because it had nothing to do with me. It had to do with him. Had to do with her. Utterly turn your life and your will over to him. And all these guys, 90% of guys in AA are saying, we don't want to hear about him. And I want to follow the guys that are only talking about him, because I wanted to learn about him. You know, even though my whole life was not about that deal. And so I come in here, and you know, what do I do? You know, how do you learn to be powerless? I don't know how I learned to be powerless. I was crushed. And what does it say in the seventh step, which is really sort of like the cousin of the first step? It says, how do we get a new perspective in here? Through 1,000 forms or 100 forms, whatever it is, of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-deficiency. There ain't nobody here because there ain't nobody that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous because they were having a good day. You know, they won the lottery. They got all the romance in their life they want. They feel great. You know, they lost all the weight. They're feeling fantastic. Man, what a life. I think I'll see what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. Good time to check it out. You know what I mean? No. We come here, you know, we come here because we're devastated, bereft, and we got no other choice. And, you know, for 5 nanoseconds, we're willing to listen. We get humiliated to go to treatment, humiliated to do this stuff. And 5 nanoseconds, we're ready to listen. And then about 80% of us start feeling better, looking better, getting a better job and all that sort of stuff. And then we just do it our own way anyway, because it doesn't stick. You know, we hear guys like me or whatever the people in there saying, I don't need that deal. Isn't this like a do-it-yourself program? One size fits, you know, sort of fits all, and you'll do it my way and all that sort of stuff. Hey, doesn't AA say we're not alive with any sect, denomination, or religion? I'll tell you one thing. AA is not alive with any sect, denomination, or religion. But I'll tell you one thing. This is from 30 years experience. You better get your ass alive. I can tell you one thing. If this program is about anything, it's about getting your ass allied with that. You better get allied with something, otherwise you're going to be floating around. You know, we really start getting into this, and we start talking about fellowship, and you get to the end of the book, and Visions for You, and it says, he will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. He's going to even show you who to hang around with. Because you don't know who to hang around with. You're going to just start hanging around with the people that were getting your ass in trouble in the first place and feeding you all sorts of crazy ideas, thinking they're cool, hip, slick, and cool. Next thing you know, you're 20 years out in this thing. You have no relationships. You're alone, and you feel like crap. And you don't even know why. And you have nobody to talk to and nobody to turn to. It's because you've been running the show. And you've been doing your deal. Because nobody can tell you what to do. Because after all, it's a do-it-yourself thing. Stay out of my life. You know, we all do it differently. Bullshit. Nonsense, as they say in the book. Nonsense. Job or no job. Wife or no wife. Nonsense. Anybody can stay sober. It depends upon their relationship with God. Whatever that means. Well, it can't mean God. It's got to mean cat or something. I don't know. Right? Our creator. So I guess if God is a cat for you, then I guess you were created by a cat. But of course, you have to understand, they talk about God, creator, the same thing. You know? But you'd have to understand the books they were reading when they wrote this thing, what they really believed and what they thought was going on. So next week we'll talk about, I don't know, maybe step two, maybe not, open-mindedness, who knows? Thank you. Okay, well, I guess the baskets are going around, right? We have no dues or fees. We're entirely...